student son, brought home the baby raccoon that he had found in the nearby woodland. Mom and Dad didn't quite know what to think. The raccoon obviously had been abandoned by its mother. And a trip to the local veterinarian revealed why the little animal was blind. Jamie's parents agreed that the raccoon's predicament was very sad, but that, after all, was nature's way. Still, Jamie was reluctant to abandon the little creature a second time in the woods, this time surely to die, and thus began an incredible family saga, the story of aggravation and tenderness and laughter and love that was bound to grow from sharing one's own home with Kitty the raccoon. And yes, it all really happened almost 20 years ago. But it was not to be forgot by any member of the Stamper family, including and perhaps especially by Jamie's father, Malcolm. For when aerospace engineer Malcolm Stamper retired from his job at Boeing 2 years ago, he started thinking about the lessons in compassion that he had learned from his acquaintance with Kitty the raccoon. And the more he thought, the more he realized that they were lessons we all need to learn. And the earlier, the better. Today, Malcolm Stamper runs a small office in Seattle. His only full-time employee is his own daughter, Mary Lynham. And he has traded the gray suits and the proper neckties of his years with Boeing for khaki breeches and athletic shoes and a little publishing company of his own invention called Storytellers, Inc., I-N-K, Storytellers, Inc. Malcolm's mission sounds simple enough: to reteach consideration of and respect for and kindness toward fellow beings, to encourage a gentler attitude toward all living things, great and small. If you want to get the guns out of the lunchboxes, he says, put humane literature in the schools. And that's precisely what Mr. Stamper intends to do. With the redistribution of classics like Black Beauty and Beautiful Joe and Albert Payson Terhune's books about collies and more than a dozen new and original books promoting a better treatment of animals. Tomorrow's classics have titles like Cousin Charlie the Crow and The Lost and Found Puppy. Malcolm Stamper's dream is to teach literacy, but at the same time teaching tenderness and compassion. He's being applauded by law enforcement officials, by sociologists who have traced much cruelty among men to their cruelty to animals when they were boys. And yes, as surely you have guessed, the story of Kitty the raccoon, tenderly penned by Malcolm's son, was the first literary step for the Stamper family on an exciting path which may someday lead to a better world. But now, whenever you hear the name Malcolm Stamper spoken respectfully in publishing circles, I hope you'll remember the man who directed development of the first jumbo jet, the Boeing 747, only to set out in his retirement upon the most glorious quest of all. And if Seattle's reincarnation of St. Francis should succeed in his mission, it'll all date back to the day his son Jamie returned home from a nearby woodland, cradling in his arms a tiny, abandoned and blind baby raccoon. And now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore our history, current events, community institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. One of the major recurring themes on this station is, of course, our Paso Robles groundwater basin. And I've got two of the architects, really, of the defeat of the 218 vote. I think you did two 218 votes, right? The defeat, right, Greg?
Well, one was an actual election, but in 2016.
Yeah. So we've got the warriors on this one, Greg Greatwall and Murray Powell, in studio. We're going to talk about the tax dollars wasted and the unmet promises from the local area groundwater sustainability authorities, the GSAs, who who really voted to defeat the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin JPA 218 event. I think it was kind of surprising to see who voted against this, and we'll talk about that. And then what we can expect next from the JPA that has no authority and little funding. Murray and Greg, thanks for being here with me today.
Thank you.
Folks, you can call in or text your questions in to 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Before we get started with this, though, I'd like to get some feedback from the audience. I have received from the Reform California group, which is headed by Carl DeMeo. I believe he's an assemblyman down in San Diego, but he's kind of leading the charge on the no on 50 vote and also on voter ID. They've been doing a bunch of mailings on these two items. I have now received 35 of the same letter from the group.
Wow.
They're all handwritten, hand-addressed envelopes. They're all the same. It says it comes from Reform California. Again, it's a worthy group, and they're doing good work, but I'd be interested in finding out if anybody else has received an inordinate amount of these envelopes from Reform California, because they're wasting a lot of money. And when I hear that we don't have enough money to fight, you know, the big money groups on the other side, it bothers me when I see such a waste. So, you know, you can either text me here at the station and let me know if you've had this experience, or you can send me an email at info@blazonbear.com. So, you know, Greg and Murray, you know, this whole water thing, I've kind of watched it from afar. I mean, like you, Greg, I'm not in the watershed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm off in the watershed, so the basin stuff doesn't necessarily directly impact me. But this story has been going on for 20 years. It has all the elements of the original Chinatown movie and the Goliath with Billy Bob Thornton and Dennis Quaid.
Exactly.
And folks, if you haven't seen that, I mean, I think he had about five seasons of that, and it was the last season, and it was all about the big steal of water in the Central Valley.
Over in Kern area.
Yeah. So this story here in Paso Robles Basin has all the elements of this.
Well, the basin was sought out because of the large amount of water that it holds. So it holds 31 to 36 million acre feet of water. Mm-hmm. So the people that came here with that understanding, and from every initial thing, was to get into the water banking business, like Stuart Resnick did over the hill, and become water purveyors and make water valuable. How do you make it valuable? You make it scarce.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same thing they do with everything in California, right? Housing is scarce.
Yeah.
Power is scarce. And then they can control our lives, right?
Okay. Well, exactly. And so what happens if you fallow a bunch of farmland? The one rich guy who can afford it still owns the farmland and still produces all the crops, while the rest of the people that can't afford it are out of business.
So this is, you know, while I don't want to dwell on this, and I know there's a lot of new stuff, we're going to get through all the things, because a couple of things happened in the last couple weeks that are really telling about where this whole thing is going, but I want to hold that off until the second segment if we can. But you know, it just seems to me, you know, from an outsider's perspective, this battle is based on a false premise. And I can tell it's a false premise because every time they start a meeting, every time they write something up, they feel like they have to state, we're doing this because the basin is in overdraft.
So right there, the state declared the basin high priority, mm-hmm, with the conditions of possible overdraft. Mm-hmm. That's what it specifically says. It doesn't say that the basin's in overdraft. They use that terminology. And they had, in 2018, we had a 14-day trial in San Jose. It was the first jury trial on a water issue in the state of California, and they could not prove there was an overdraft.
This is in 2016, you said?
2018.
Oh, 2018.
It's okay. Part of the quiet title action.
Okay.
So it's one of the five actual trials that we had. So the quiet title people have prevailed in five court, mm-hmm, battles, mm-hmm, and three stipulated agreements. Mm-hmm. And like when you said that I live in the watershed, and you say, so why does the guy in the watershed want to be part of what's going on in the basin? Well, I'm part of the Quiet Title lawsuit, and they made 42 of us who don't live over the basin that live in the watershed part of the lawsuit because they didn't want none of us to protect our rights. So while the city of Paso Robles is an appropriator and has no authority outside their limits, they chose to sue me. So did the county, and so did other agencies. And agencies are appropriators, and the people that live over the land are overliers, and they want you to all believe we're stakeholders because they don't want to use the word that gives us the priority right.
Okay. So, but basically this presumption that there was an overdraft in the basin is the reason these five GSAs were created, correct?
It's the reason that the state said we need to manage the basin.
You need to, okay. All right. So over the last 20 years, let's say, which is about how long this has been going on, how much money have the five GSAs collected in state grants?
Well, the main collectors of the grants were the County of San Luis Obispo and the City of Paso Robles. Mm-hmm. None of the other agencies existed on a majority of that time, not until the state said, hey, we want people to step up to be groundwater sustainability agencies. Now, to be an agency, they preferred that you were a water district and that you had land use authority. The city is a water district and has land use authority within its boundaries. Mm-hmm. San Miguel and Heritage, when they first got in, they are water districts, but they have no land use authority. These two make-believe water districts that decided to be irrigation districts have no land use authority, have no system of works to provide water to anybody other than the fact they wanted to be their, they want a seat at the table, so they wanted to be a GSA. So the county is not a water district other than what they call a county service area. So that would be Shandon and Santa Margarita. They're the only two places where the county is the water district. There is no water district over the 436,000 acres of the basin.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody is their own water district that owns a well. And this is what they were trying. And this all comes from Santa Maria, and we're not going to get into the weeds, but when they did their adjudication of the basin, it limits the abusers and overusers and sets the table right. The Department of Water Resources in 2014 said the best way to manage a basin is to adjudicate the basin. It's all done through the courts. Everybody gets their piece of the pie. Done. We're finished.
Why didn't we do that here?
Because then the abusers can't use what they want to use. Why they're telling you what to do.
All right. So again, going back, how much money how much state money has been granted to?
It's in the millions.
Okay.
Well, it's in the tens of millions.
Yeah.
And what was this money supposed to be used for?
Every one of the things was a study.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had six actual studies on the basin, and not one of them says we're in overdraft. We had one model run, which is what they, in 2016, which is the group that actually put together the groundwater plan.
The consulting group.
Yeah, the consulting group, Montgomery and Associates. And they're the ones that said the court accepted the final report that was done in 2018. That work, the model, was done in 2016, and it's 20,000 to 30,000 acre feet less. You can't take over if you don't claim or prove there's a problem. You have to make everybody believe there's a problem so that they'll let you take over.
Kind of like global warming.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So really, again, in many regards, and I mean, everybody's, you know, I'm a capitalist at heart, but a lot of this is, you know, consultants making money off of state grants. Again, the same thing that we are facing on so many different things.
I got the budget man right here, and he can talk to about that, and that's Murray Powell. And you're going to see that the $7.6 million that they received here recently,
2022,
it was all spent on consultants. Not one project was completed or done. They want to say that things were completed. What they mean by that is they did a study.
Hmm.
So we have six studies on state water. They spent another $300,000 with one of the same consultants that did one of the past ones to do another $300,000 study. Nothing changed.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, we got another study.
So, I mean, if you added up how much money Murray has been, you know, granted out to the consultancy class?
Going back 20 years?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
He knows more about the earlier years than I do.
Okay.
But you know, there's a couple of grants, like the one you talk about with the $3 million deal, which was supposed to be half and half, and one half didn't get paid.
That was the, so when we got Montgomery & Associates to be the consultant to put together the groundwater plan, the state said, we will give you $1.5 million in matching funds. Mm-hmm. So you show us that you spent $1.5 million on the basin, we'll give you $1.5 million. So the two water districts, the Shannon, San Juan, and the EPC, which EPC never became a GSA at that time, so they weren't even eligible, but they both claimed that they spent money on becoming a water district. That's not money spent on the basin. They're in violation of the agreement that was given. The county, and you couldn't use funds that you already got grants for, and you couldn't duplicate other people's stuff. The county said, well, we created three water districts. I'm like, what are they? Well, you had the one that failed, and the two other water districts where they were claiming they made themselves. So none of the money was, but the state said, we're going to give you the money anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave them the money anyway.
So, and then there were multiple studies on figuring out if they could connect the state water project over here. Right. And they all basically said, how many of those were spent money on?
I think there's six of them. Yeah.
And they all said the same thing, right?
Table A, that's called Table A. What? That water costs a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that would make it cost more is the fact that electricity costs more now to pump it.
Mm-hmm.
The other costs were, what are you going to do for infrastructure? You either have to buy treated water and untreat it before you can put it in the ground, or you have to buy untreated water where there's no delivery system, so you have to build a delivery system. So that's $60 to $80 million just to get it from the top of the hill at 46 down to Shandon.
Mm.
So who's got the $80 million to buy the water? And that doesn't even include the price of the water. That's just the infrastructure.
Well, and speaking of infrastructure, I mean, one of the things, we have like a pipeline to nowhere too, don't we?
Oh, yeah. That's Paso Robles. One of these planned projects is called the Paso Robles Recycled Water Project, and mm-hmm. that was to take treated water from the wastewater facility on the right side, the west side of the river, and pipe it under the river to the east side where it was going to be in a blending pond, mm-hmm. with, and then bring in the Nacimiento Lake water to blend it. And then they had to build a whole huge pipeline system to move that water up to the north side of the city where all the ag properties are. And so they had a $3.5 million grant for that that was all spent to put the pipe under the river. And then they figured out that it was going to cost something like $120 million to build the delivery pipeline system. And they also found realized.
They being who? This is Paso Robles?
It would be the. This would be part of the fees that the all the irrigators would have to be paid way or another. And so that whole project got canceled when they finally figured this out in early January of this year.
That was for 36 connections.
That was for 36 property owners. We're going to... So $120 million, right? So obviously, it blew it right out of the water.
But wasn't there like a 30-year bond?
That was part of it. That money includes 30 years of 5% interest calculated into it and the whole thing.
And how much was the bond for? $120 million?
It would have been, been most all the money because they don't have any funds other than they already wasted the grant money on
it. And again, that didn't include any water. That's just the infrastructure.
That wasn't the water cost.
That wasn't what it was going to cost to buy the treated wastewater, and it wasn't what was going to be the cost to buy the nasty water that you needed with it.
So this bond is still being paid off, I
guess. Well, no.
They never did it.
They never did it.
If you want to talk about bonds, I mean, and it's not really for today, it's the nasty pipeline.
Right.
You know, that's a whole other story in terms of how much water costs to bring from the lake.
The city of Paso Robles spends over $4 million a year on principal and interest for their portion of the pipeline, and they don't use the water.
Much of the water.
And they've got 15 years left to pay on it. So up to right now, they've paid over $72 million for water that they haven't put to beneficial use.
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well, that is another. That's probably another show. Let's turn, and we've got about 3 minutes left, so I think this is probably enough time to talk about this. But we can take it on the other side of the break as well. So the 218 vote that you guys really, I mean, I have to say, you and the Cagliaros did just an outstanding job of educating the public.
Yeah, there was. If it wasn't for, Samantha and John were big players, and so was Dean, and his wife. And I got together with them, and we just said, hey, everybody split up and start calling people and start reaching out to who we can reach. And there's a lot of disgruntled people that were in those, that were parts of those two districts that were never being listened by the people in their districts that they actually are on those, part of those things. And they said, hey, you're not paying attention to what we want. You're just doing what you want.
Now, you got a pretty good idea after all was said and done of who really voted against this, don't you?
Yes. And me and Murray and Darcia Stebbins actually looked at the physical envelopes and the different things and the stuff. And we're still working on that because they're not being stored here. And Murray can get into more of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they're being stored with the consultant, right?
Yeah, I've got public record requests on all of this that went out at the 4th of September, and some of the requests haven't even responded at all. Some have responded just saying we're working on it. It was funny, last night, the law firm for both, it's the same law firm, represents both water districts, Shandon and EPC. Mm-hmm. Last night, I was on the phone late with him about, 8 o'clock? My phone starts dinging while I'm on the phone. I start looking. They said that the attorney sent me 8 emails, attachments of a bunch of records, and I haven't even had a chance to look at them, but I kind of went through real quick. Each of those attachments is between 25 and 50 pages each of all of the records that are being requested by me.
Wow.
Yeah. Haven't looked at them yet.
That'll certainly be interesting. So,
yeah.
I hear the bumper music. When we get back, I want to talk about who really voted against this because it was startling, really. Yeah. So, folks, stand by. We'll be back on the other side of the break.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
News. I'm Tom Rigotti. The government shutdown is now entering its fourth week. Today, President Trump huddled with Senate Republicans at the White House. Majority Leader John Thune.
We're hopeful that this will be the week when we break out of this and the Democrats come to their senses and decide to open up the government. We're going to give them several opportunities, as you know, to do that.
Democrats blame Republicans, arguing any deal must extend health care subsidies. They accuse the GOP of being unwilling to compromise. A new poll shows Americans have expressed concerns about the cost of health care.
An Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll of nearly 1,300 adults finding about 6 in 10 are extremely or very concerned about their health care costs going up next year. 4 in 10 say they are extremely or very concerned about not being able to pay for health care or medications they need.
That's Fox's Kristen Goodwin. America is listening to Fox News.
Let's be honest. Everyone hates putting up Christmas lights. So why not just skip it this year? The truth is, it's not about the lights. It's about creating the memories. It's about seeing the kids' faces light up and not spending all day hanging up lights. I'm Aaron King, the owner of Slow Holiday Lights. We handle everything you need to make this holiday season the most memorable yet. We design, install, maintain, and store the beautiful Christmas lights so you don't have to lift a finger. No ladders to fall off of, no tangled lights to mess with, no stress, period. Look us up at slowholidaylights.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. I'm visiting with Murray Powell and Greg Graywall talking about water. We're talking water. Okay, so I know you haven't had a chance to go through all of the ballots yet.
Right.
But let's talk about that little drama, because apparently, I mean, I'm getting the sense that there's a huge lack of transparency here going on here.
Right.
That they're the JPA is making it hard for you to get information just by virtue of the fact that you're required to do a public, you know, a Freedom of Information Act request.
Right.
So what's going on there, Murray?
Well, so there's this guy, Blakesley, he's an employee of Hallmark Consulting that's an office in Bakersfield. And they've been contracted by the GPA for his services. He's kind of an admin guy for the GPA. But they also, just in a recent meeting, they decided to contract with Hallmark to be the actual internal administrator of their agency, believe it or not, even though they're in Bakersfield. And also, now they want to take, they're supposed to be what they call, I'll call them an interim director that kind of oversees the whole operation above the four GSAs. They have never gone forward to hire anybody for that, and now the Hallmark is proposing that they become that director for the GPA. But so that's another Bakersfield operation. Nothing's going on here. So we've demanded that all the records and all the administrative efforts have to be done within the city of Paso Robles.
Yeah.
Or the basin.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay, so I know you haven't had a chance to look at all of the ballots yet.
Right.
But, I mean, so this was kind of, I mean, in my opinion, and again, this is my opinion, this was kind of a rigged election, because they eliminated the de minimis users in an effort to make their voting group smaller, thinking they, being the JPA, thinking that they were going to be able to get the vote passed that way.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But it didn't work out that way, did it?
No, their first few months, they specifically kept telling us there's no way they can let the de minimis user be out of this, that they're going to have to pay something. And they spent grant money to do a rate study to come up with the amount each place should have to pay, and they hired an attorney, outside firm, that's the attorney for the county in the quiet title action. So now they hire that same firm to come after the people that she's already lost in court with over stuff that deals with the quiet title. Then they make all these rules on, well, you have 45 days for an objection to the process, you have 60 days for a protest that you don't want to pay a fee. And then after those first few months, their marketing people said, hey, if you let these de minimis people vote, you're going to have the same thing that happened to you in 2016. You're going to lose big time, because we won by almost 80%. So magically, all of a sudden, you don't get to vote, because they're not going to give you a bill if you're a de minimis user. Yet they had a rate for the de minimis user, and they were saying that the other people were going to have to pay their rate.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have somebody pay your property taxes, and then what time do they all of a sudden get your property?
There's right. So they basically rigged the voting pool, basically, and put it on the side of the larger part number, the larger ag people that owned a lot of parcels. Is that correct?
Yeah, there was 807 owners for almost 1,300 parcels.
And do you know what the final vote was at this point?
Well, they gave us numbers. It was like, what was it, six?
We had over 100 more than we needed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But actually, one of the reasons we want to look through all this, we know that that's inaccurate, because there were 40, we know for sure there were 45 return mailers, so that reduces the noticing number. Mm-hmm. So there were less people noticed, and there was also a group of late protests that was a problem with the post office. It wasn't they sent them in late, but by the time the GPA got them in their PO box, it was after the August 1st date. But they said, "Oh well, we don't care about any of that because we lost anyway."
So, well, and you're a retired CPA, correct?
Right.
So you know how to count beans.
Yeah, more or less.
Wouldn't you say, Murray, that by virtue of the fact that they lost the vote after rigging the people who could vote, wouldn't you say that it was probably the larger landowners who ended up voting against this?
There was quite a few farmers that were part of those two districts. Mm-hmm. Well,
they weren't even.
Each guy had so many votes too. If you had a certain amount of parcels, mm-hmm. like one person that belonged to the Shannon San Juan district had like 20 votes because mm-hmm. they had 20 parcels. Another person had 18. So this is why the number of actual owners was not the same as the actual amount of parcels. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, let's say, and we don't know the exact, but there is a certain portion of undeliverable notices. Yeah. So those notices were automatically yeses, because even though they couldn't be delivered, there was no protest coming back.
Right.
That's how messed up this.
Okay. So, but I take from what you're telling me is that there were some pretty large landowners who we initially thought would probably not vote so that it would pass, the JPA would be approved. They ended up voting against this.
Yeah.
And so why? What do you think went? Why did they think they decided to vote against this after all this fall for all?
They've been paying for. Since 2017, they've been paying to be part of these two districts that delivered zero, don't deliver any water, don't have no system. And they were promised that, you know, they were going to look out for them and do it. Now, on top of those payments they were making, besides their regular property taxes, they were being asked to dip in their pockets one more time to fund this joint powers agreement and this new authority that they made. And the first $1 million of the budget out of the $3+ million a year was to pay for the consultant and an attorney, not even to do anything. and you know, everybody's scratching their head going, how does this benefit the basin? How does this make the basin issues solvable by just having another bureaucracy with another board, with another attorney, and so on and so forth?
Okay. So, you know, then the next step that I'm looking at, apparently on October 8th, Jerry Ray, who just quit again as the director of the, what is it, the POMAR?
The EPC.
Okay, yeah. So that's
Water District.
Right,
he
the Estrella POMAR Creston Water District.
Yeah.
He was like running the board.
He was a board member. There's five members of the board. He wasn't the chair, but he was, the president, they call him.
So he
was the treasurer. He was mm-hmm. the one that was doing most of the work. Mm-hmm.
So in this presentation, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I kind of paraphrased it here for the purpose of the show, you know, in his swan song, he's still on the JPA board, right?
No, he resigned from both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder why. So basically, he said extraction is the issue, the primary issue facing the basin. And then he concludes that the current financial and governance relationship between the JPA and the EPC places the EPC in an untenable situation, meaning that this is not working out for us, boys. Basically what he was telling the EPC board. And he recommended, he didn't necessarily say what change. Well, he made a few reforms to the JPA, which we can talk about. But quoting his report, without substantial changes to the JPA agreement, EPC should withdraw.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what would the impact of that be?
Well, so what happened when the 218 failed, now the four GSAs, the four of them, had to ante up the money to continue to fund their activities.
Mm-hmm.
So far, since the failure on August 1st, they've anteed up $529,000 that is split between the four of them on certain percentages. The EPC pays 30% of that number.
How did they come up with the percentages for the districts?
It was carried back to the old
MOA.
MOA, the old PVCC organization. And they carried that forward when they formed the GPA mm-hmm. up until the end of December. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they do not have the funds to continue to fund this ongoing GPA.
Their position was they're transferring power from their water district to a one person, one vote of the four people that sit on the joint powers. And if they're going to only get one vote and the other three can outvote them, then they should each pay 25%, not one guy pay 30 and one guy pay 16 and so on and so forth. So they were saying, hey, wait a minute, we're not getting a fair shake for our one vote, and we don't agree with all these different issues because you have too many people there out of four people. Let's see. The city has no authority outside the city limits. They shouldn't even be on the board because they're limited by court order on what they can take from the basin. The two water districts represent different farmers over the basin, mm-hmm. and Bruce Gibson doesn't represent anybody. He wasn't elected anywhere up here. He got the other two South County people to vote with him so he could take over and repay the kindness of all the campaign contributions he got from certain people.
So this explains a lot to me because I'm looking at Jerry Ray's presentation that he made on the 8th. His recommendations to reform the JPA was it needed, instead of it being a three-quarter vote majority on the JPA, it needed to be unanimous.
Yeah, especially for budgeting and financial reasons. Yeah.
And that basically everything should be split equally, you know. And so so this leads us, I guess, one last question before we get, and again, we can talk about this too as far as, I mean, I think what came up in the agenda for tomorrow's meeting kind of trumps some of the questions that I had, and we're going to talk about that here in a second. But Prop 26, I mean, that can't be. Can that be used to fund the JPA at this point?
Only limited.
Limited.
Yeah. It could be used for administrative deals, but can't be used for any of the work that needs to be done. If on whatever work they declared needs to be done, they signed an agreement to get that $7.6 million with the Department of Water Resources, and on that agreement, there's eligible costs and there's ineligible cost. And on 7B of the ineligible, it says you cannot use any of this grant money to create another board to handle Sigma requirements. Well, they were part of a board that was under an MOA. They created a new board called a JPA, and they used grant money to fund it. And even the county right now, to pay their $100,000, took $100,000 of grant money to pay their portion because they never budgeted that they were going to lose the 218.
Yeah. I mean, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars were used
for that 218
grant money to do the 218.
$125,000 went to the consultant.
I'm sorry, to form the GPA and do the 218.
Yeah. And where did that money go?
It went to the accountants and the lawyers, the consultants. It's all administrative to form this thing. I mean, you think about it, each of the four, actually five, because one didn't join, but through the formation, there was five GSAs with their own legal counsels putting together in the back room this whole GPA formation agreement. And the first time we really got good wind of it was like in December of last 16th. Year, and it was like, oh, well, we're just kind of looking at this thing, and we're thinking about whether we really want to do it, you know, so don't worry about this.
Nothing to see
and
here.
And then, of
nothing
course, it just here. Went right through, all and right. By April 1st, it was done.
All right, so now we've got another JPA meeting tomorrow.
Right.
The agenda, of course, came out yesterday. And there's an attachment from Steve Sinton, and I've met Steve. He was on the show talking about the Rangeland Trust, and you know, very knowledgeable guy. I knew from him, but also Murray reminded me he was an attorney that was worked for the state DWR back when a lot of this was all happening. And he's an overlier of the Chandon district, correct?
Correct.
And he wrote a lengthy 4-page missive that is, I hopefully will be discussed t-
tomorrow at the JPA meeting.
Oh, it's a major, it's the main agenda.
This is a huge, and basically, he's recommending that they pull the plug on the JPA with some caveats here, and I want to unpack this. So who wants to take a stab at Steve's recommendations here?
Well, Merck and Gulp, I will say one thing, and if you go back and you started at 2005, when Steve came back, Santa Maria was getting adjudicated. They were worried that this basin might get adjudicated and that the people would obtain their rights. And so they came up with a thing called the Pryor Agreement. The guys who were part of Pryor was headed by Steve Senton. And then that turned into the group called Prags that were on the other side with Bruce Gibson that lost the election on AB 2453 in 2016. Mm-hmm. Then they turned into these two fake water districts. And when they decided to become those, there was no public meetings. There was no nothing. They were working behind the scenes at the county, dividing up the percentages of what they were willing to pay to be part of this administration, this special administration to do whatever. Mm-hmm. They were so thinking that they were going to kick our butts in the 2016 election that it was put into the water code. Hmm. And it never passed, and it's still in there, but it doesn't mean anything.
Wow. So anyway, Steve, and I want Murray, I want you to deal with the details that you think are important. But basically, he identifies the fact that the whole effort, the whole 218 effort, was a bad market. They didn't market it right. I mean, that's really what he's saying here, and that there's too much bad blood now between everybody to resuscitate. The JPA. Would you say that that's his basic? What are the highlights to you when you read this?
Well, on the 218, they first of all, they made the mistake of absolutely depending on it passing, and they made no provisions for this additional funding that they now have to pay for themselves, and that's the main problem they have. But when you go through this, it's about a 3-page, and I suggest anybody that can get a hold of this, but you can search it on the web and get the agenda.
Folks, you can send me an email to info@blazinbear.com, and I'll be happy to send you a copy of the agenda and the letter.
Yeah, exactly. Have it.
I've got it. So,
Barry. Yeah. So, anyway, when I read this, what I'm listening to is what we have been complaining about before the GPA was formed. Way back, I got involved in early 2023 with the PBC. This is all the stuff that we've been complaining about. And now it's like, they just figured it out.
Go through those things.
Well, it starts with the mission agrees the governing entity needs to focus on Sigma. The reason for forming JPA was to implement the plan in Sigma.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not like a revelation here. They're just
somebody
figure it out. And then they talk about outreach and responsive. Their outreach is almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had two or three open, what they call open meetings or town hall meetings. And they absolutely were disasters, and even the county admits to it, because they never did presentations. The GPA board directors weren't there. Gibson would show up occasionally, and so on. And the main problem now is that they have nowhere to go in order to do the work that's still needed. And I want to say here is that, and Jerry Ray hit it right on the head on his thing that you just talked about, his presentation. All they have to do is reduce their groundwater irrigation pumping. And now with the problem with the wine industry having the huge financial issues, it's already being done, but mm-hmm. nobody has any of the information to determine where to go from here.
Yep. All right. When we come back, we're going to wrap this up. I want to talk about a couple more points that Steve made in his addendum to, or the attachment to tomorrow's thing. And then we will talk about a couple other items like the quiet title. Where does this leave the quiet title lawsuit? So guys, stand by, folks. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. So please stand by for this wrap up.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks finishing mixed, but the Dow rose for its 12th record close of the year as investors digested the latest batch of mostly upbeat earnings reports. The Magnificent Seven tech stocks were mostly lower, led by Google. Its stock fell 2% after ChatGPT maker OpenAI announced a new AI browser called Atlas that OpenAI hopes will challenge Google Chrome's dominance. Apple stock rose over 0.25% for its second straight record close. A sell-off in gold today with prices tumbling over 5%, marking their biggest daily drop in more than a decade, a day after the precious metal notched a record closing high. The Dow winners: 3M, Salesforce, and Sherwin-Williams. The Dow decliners: Caterpillar, JP Morgan Chase, and Amgen. The Dow up 218 points, the Nasdaq lower by 37, S&P 500 up a fraction. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
When I started skiing, I didn't think about setting any records. When I won my first race, I didn't think about how many more I might win. So when I made it to the top of the world, it never crossed my mind to stop. Being the best isn't the same as being your best. There are no shortcuts to the top, so find the people who help get you there. I'm Michaela Schifrin, and that's what Team Stifel means to me. If you're an advisor or an investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
At Peak Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. I'm visiting with Greg Graywall and Murray Powell about the water here in the Paso Basin. Again, you can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Real quickly, next week I've got Pamela Fitzpatrick, a CPA. She's going to be talking about tax resolution and mitigation, IRS notices, audits, liens, and levies. So you hear commercials about this all the time, people trying to charge you for these services, and Pamela's an expert at this, and we're going to unpack that. And then in the hour, next week, I got John Pichong, who's our, of course, District 1 supervisor. I'm sure he'll have some comments about the water and JPA and all that as well. Looks like I might have a couple of questions, but let's go back to this. So one of the things that jumped out at me, Greg and Murray, is that, you know, one of the things Steve Sitton points out is you really can't disenfranchise the de minimis users like they tried. And isn't that one of the things that the Howard Jarvis group that you connected with, you know, charged about? You made a legal challenge to the JPA?
Yeah, well, technically the 218 requires that every every landowner in the basin has to be involved in a 218 charge. So legally, they could not exclude the de minimis users. So they did. They tried an end around on that, and that, among other issues, a lot of that whole 218 process was done not according to law. I'm sure it would all be in a lawsuit right now if it had passed.
Yeah, you know, I want to get to these questions here. I just noticed them. I'm not used to using this texting thing, but this leads into the quiet title question, Greg. The question is, I heard that the final court appearance for the quiet title action has been postponed from January into late 2026. Can this be true, and how did it happen, if true?
Yeah, so it is been delayed a few more months. There is a court date, and part of the problem is whenever there's an issue with these attorneys, and the other side, the defendants, were not providing the discovery that they were supposed to provide. So our attorney had to go to the judge and say, hey, they're not giving what they're supposed to give. And so they wanted to extend the date. Well, you can't just get a date with it that you want on the calendar at the court. You have to get a date that's open. And so that was the available date. This is the last affirmative defense. They're claiming they have Spanish Pueblo rights from 175 years ago, which they're going to lose. And it's just a way to kick the can down the road further. Why are they part of Sigma if they have all these great rights from the Spanish and the Mexicans being here?
All right, here's another question here. And this is a multi-question, but I'm going to go focus on the last one. You know, the listener says, I listen to your guests list the failures of the county from wasting grant money to failed Nacimiento pipeline to not listening to their citizens, but then you seem to be advocating for county to run the basin. Isn't this contradictory?
No. The County Flood Control Water Conservation District that we already pay taxes to is supposed to be managing the flood control and stuff. They don't need to manage my water use on my portion of the basin. This whole thing with the fallowing program and these other deals were created by the county. The county allowed ag clusters of homes to be put in the middle of agriculture land. The county allowed shallow wells. Now they're finding out that the shallow wells don't work good with deep wells for certain irrigated agriculture.
In certain areas.
And the county is mandated by the state of California to do the management. The other guys don't have to do it. The county has to do it. And I want my tax dollars to go to quality people that they're supposed to have employed, not to their consultant friends, to manage what needs to be managed. And that is turn in an annual report, show the water use, show the rainfall, show the levels. And if they would have finished, me and Murray were both on a technical advisory committee that was set up for expanded monitoring of wells. That was 2.5 years ago. We gave them 140 wells.
151, yeah, to be exact.
And they maybe got in 10 in 3 years. And that's, so that will tell you in the specific areas. And going back to the reduction of use, in the groundwater plan said that that reduction would take place in the affected areas that were causing problems. We don't have a problem throughout 436,000 acres. We have a problem in specific areas, and they're using a shotgun when they need a rifle. Target what needs to be target, leave the rest of the people alone. But see, they can't make money that way.
All right, final question. Murray, let's start. What do you expect out of the JPA meeting tomorrow? What do you think is going to happen? Can they just fold up the tent and be done, or is that not even possible at this point?
Well, I think there will be a lot of discussion, and if they operate like they have in the past at most of these meetings, they'll bring up all the issues and then probably put it off till the next meeting. And the next meetings is interesting because the next meeting is supposed to be in November, and part of this agenda is proposing to cancel that meeting and not have one until December. And starting January 1st, they are totally out of money. Mm-hmm. They're totally out of money on January 1st. So either the GSA is going to have to kick back in, and by the way, Blaine Reilly, who's a... County director of the basin, the Slo County employee, has said that they don't have the budget to fund any more costs for this thing.
No, wow, great. Well, real quick,
they got the budget for him because they pay him $300,000 a year. So let's use that money.
All right, folks. Well, this is the latest and greatest on water in Pastoral Basin. So thanks for listening and thanks for your questions. And I will see you next week. Have a good one. Take care.
Oh. Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to Barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.